Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of the 2023 run of Doctor Who. When it moved to Disney Plus, they decided it was a new series, so this is the third series of Doctor Who taking place pretty much right on the heels of the last series. So it's like a new number one in comics or something.
Yeah.
We've got Shudigatwa as the Doctor. He was introduced in the last special where he bi-generated from the David Tennant 14th Doctor, making this the 15th Doctor, but the 14th is still around.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see the 14th in this season, but he does get kind of alluded to at least once. Twice, actually. Because there's one episode where we see the different faces of the Doctor.
Yes.
8-episode season, so a little short, but a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really liking this incarnation of the Doctor.
He's got good energy.
Yeah, he's got a lot of raw energy, but he also seems to be trying to find the joy in the moment.
Yes.
And he's got, it's funny because I always thought that having gotten, it started with the Eccleston Doctor for me. Actually, I'd seen the 96 special, so that one. But Tennant was such a defining Doctor. And then Matt Smith had a definite energy, but a little different type.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got the 13th Doctor, her version was very similar to Tennant's.
Yes.
Which I think led into an excuse to, let's do Tennant for the 14th. But that Doctor had less energy than the 10th.
Yeah.
So for that 14th Doctor to kind of almost de facto go into some kind of a therapy of get yourself right so the 15th can be this version.
Yeah.
Was really interesting. The other thing I like is there was a definite stronger sense of music being a thing.
Mm-hmm.
A defining aspect of this Doctor, complete with the Beatles kind of music episode.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really well done.
Yeah.
And there was definitely, that was one of the many episodes where seeing the additional kind of effects and budget and whatnot partnering with Disney Plus allowed.
Yeah.
And again, we got that in the finale as well.
Well, for me, these 8 episodes were very much on the theme of we do what's right because it's right, not because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And we stand by what we believe in, not just when it's hard, but even when the people we're standing up for don't really seem worth it.
The social media episode really hit that one home, because until we got to the end where the lead character, native character, was kind of, it was bad enough I had to see you on screen, but to hang out with you in person.
Yeah.
And there's that moment of him processing that of, wait, oh, that's what you think. And he's like, it's okay what you say. It's even okay what you think, but let me save you.
Yeah. Yes.
And he handled that so well in the aspect that that scene could not have, would not have happened with almost any other Doctor.
Yeah. Well, and you could tell as she's coming in to this area where the refugees are gathering, that he's put together the pieces on why she's alone and not with the other person she joined up with on the way.
Yeah, her excuse of, oh, he's going to save others, he quickly realizes, nah, you let him die to save your own skin.
Yeah.
Because she is the bad social media influencer persona.
Well, the one character worth saving in that whole town didn't get saved. And actually, he entertained me 6 ways from Sunday. What was his name? Johnny September or something like that?
December, I thought. Something like that.
No, it was an S name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for the last name.
September, because it was, his name sorted alphabetically before her name, and I forget her name. But the fact that people were getting killed in this place alphabetically.
That was entertaining.
And the rationale of, there's an AI, you're all social media influencers, and the AI grew to hate you.
Yes.
That rang true.
Yes, yes.
But the fact it was such a white populace.
Whoa.
Didn't really hit me until that scene.
Yeah. What got me about the one guy, though, was his whole, he gets how the rising in the rankings and everything works, but he makes his videos, he drops his videos, then he gets off.
Yes. He contributes to the social media, but does not partake of it himself.
Yeah.
So he's one of those rare people who's actually read books, gone outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because occasionally I'll be going through social media and I'll see a fairly well-known influencer going on this diatribe about how they're baffled by people who waste hours a day scrolling through social media. And I'm sitting here thinking, you mean looking at posts like the one you get paid to put up?
There's a don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen many sci-fi things do riffs on social media.
Yes.
With the upvote, the downvote, and whatnot. And this was, I think, one of the better ones, although the one the Orville did was really good too. And I like how Russell T. Davies, both him and his writer's room, because there are a few other writers involved, they're able to cover current topics, firmly implant them in a sci-fi setting, allowing them to really accentuate and overpronounce that aspect of society.
Yeah.
To really shine a spotlight on kind of the good, the bad, and the indifferent.
Well, and I think the Space Babies episode did a bit of that.
Yes. The Space Babies one had kind of the fairy tale aspect of it, the corporate bureaucracy aspect of it.
Yeah.
The person who did the right thing, even though it was hard because, well, somebody had to.
Well, and the we've put living beings into a holding pattern and just kind of left them there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which for me was kind of the relatable modern element.
Yeah, there were parts of that that rang unfortunately true. That was also one, though, where the, and we're going to leave them, but they have to be in good hands, was a little hand-wavy in terms of they'll be fine, I've arranged for this.
Well, we've sent them off to a planet that takes refugees.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's the hand-waving I'm talking about. I phoned ahead, they know to expect them kind of a deal.
Yeah.
But each of the episodes really hit a different kind of time, place, and style to it. And I loved how we started in the first one with Ruby. She literally steps on a butterfly, turns into a butterfly-ish individual. The doctor realizes he hadn't flipped the anti-butterfly switch or whatever.
Yeah.
But he kind of fixes things. And quickly setting up in this new series that there is no safety net.
Yes.
Now, if you go back to some of the earlier seasons and stuff, matter of fact, the one that I think they showed clips from in the finale, because there's one from the Sarah Jane era, where she's like, oh, this is happening now. It's okay. I'm from 1980. And the world's just fine. So why don't we just leave? That doctor takes her to 1980, which is a desolate wasteland. And there's kind of the, it doesn't turn out okay because it turns out okay. It turns out okay because people do things.
Yes.
And I knew in the finale of this one, it's like, okay, you're going to kill off somebody. Fine. You got to show that this big bad means death. Got it. Okay. You're killing another person. Oh, you killed this person that we recognize.
That's not staying.
You've overplayed your hand.
Yep.
It's going to get rolled back. But I don't fault Russell T. Davies for that in the least. And it's not the first time he's done that. And you go back to some of his early stuff, both with the arc of the first season and then the arc that led into The Master, which I want to say was maybe his third thereabouts. There were definite things where it's like things are going to get rolled back. There is time travel at play. And things have to get to the rock bottom point.
Well, we had an episode that covered decades and beautifully.
Yes. And it was one of those things that afterwards I was wondering, does she remember? Because Ruby basically, within the first minute, I think, of the episode, kind of forks into what turns out to be an alternate timeline, lives through that for decades, which I thought they did wonderfully, kind of the time hopping and aging her and stuff like that.
Well, and her realizing what she needed to do.
Yes. Yes. Her having paid attention during that first minute.
Yes.
And it's like, wait a sec, I've got a theory, but not just assuming it was true either. Yes. But then it gets to where she has met UNIT and a few other things.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end, when it kind of comes full circle, and I thought how it came full circle could have been better. And she's able to instinctively kind of stop it from going down that path. When she then later got to unit and didn't recognize the people, it's like, okay, she doesn't remember that time.
Yeah.
She remembered just enough at just the right time because of how she kind of looped back to prevent that path. But that was one of two episodes in which the Doctor played a fairly minor role, as you had uncovered, because I hadn't realized. Their shooting schedule was such that shooting Atwell wasn't available for all episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they had to work around his other commitments.
Yeah.
I don't know what led to that or how they got into that boat or whatever, but I'm kind of glad they did because it gave for a very good companion-focused episode.
Agreed.
Without having the Doctor in a subordinate role, which I thought was one of the fallacies of the Capaldi run.
I was going to say, I got very worried when we had two episodes in a row that were Dr. Light of, were we going to accidentally push the Doctor into more of a companion situation to his companion.
And I definitely felt that happened with Clara and the Capaldi Doctor.
Yeah.
And Ruby reminds me in some respects of Clara.
Yeah.
And to have her have the chance to shine without sidelining, I mean, the Doctor was out of the episode, but understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just like we had one episode where he doesn't have the sonic and stuff.
Yes.
And another where he can't really just rely on the TARDIS per se. There's the usual, you got to see Batman without the utility belt. Get rid of the toys. It's got to be the man that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that also with the companion of, if the companion is always there to be saved by the Doctor, that makes them kind of weak.
Yes.
So for her to step up and handle it all was good.
Well, we had a great episode where the Doctor was stuck standing on landmine.
Yes. And that one, to take an actor who's got a definite physical expression.
Yes.
Aspect to him. I mean, the number of times he seemed to be crying at various points in this season.
Yeah.
But always at the right moments.
Yeah.
And at the right amount, so to speak.
He was a very heartfelt Doctor.
Yes. He is much, much more open with his emotion than I would say any of the past Doctors we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that aspect of him because he's also enjoying things a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And even when he was pretty much getting dissed to his face because of the color of his face.
Yeah.
He was so disappointed with that, but still going to save them if they would let him.
Yes.
It was so well done. And again, that was one of the episodes that would have had to have played out differently with almost any other Doctor. And I say almost any other because I think the two female Doctors we've seen, the one that had the season and then the one that was kind of the backstory insert, if you will, those two could have had a similar thing based solely on gender, if nothing else.
I think most writers would have put the companion on the landmine. They would have left the Doctor free to be trying to problem solve and move around.
I can't see Russell T. Davies making that decision because it's so much harder for the Doctor to solve the thing if he can't move around, see anything, and do anything.
Yeah.
He's got to be relying on others.
Well,
it's almost literally handicapping him.
Yeah. And the fact that the only way to turn off the mine was for the people who set the mine to say, I surrender.
Yeah. The whole nature of that conflict was an interesting reveal, and I'm sure if I'd thought about it much at all, but because it's like, that's not the crux of the problem. There's a war. Got it. Okay.
I had a nagging feeling that the reveal was coming from early on because we were seeing the enemy in the fog.
We were fearing the enemy in the fog. We never saw the enemy.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a commentary on kind of the military-industrial complex.
Well, for me, it was also, though, a commentary on we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Yes. And these are the sorts of things that I think Russell T. Davies is really good at writing about and around.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a book, The Writer's Journey, that I've got on Kindle. I think we need to read it. I've been interested in it for ages because it's around, I want to say, the third season with the Master. While he was writing that season, putting it all together, all that kind of stuff, he was corresponding with a journalist.
Ah.
Who, and I could be mistaken on all the details.
Yeah, here, yeah.
Because I remember this from, you know, again, the 10, 20 years ago or whatever that all was happening. But it was them wanting a kind of behind the scenes information. He's like, okay, And this was kind of the back and forth. How did you break this down? What did you do here? All this kind of stuff. And from my understanding, he was very open with all of that. And I don't know if it was originally intended to be an article or whatever. Not only did it become a book, it became a book that was, I don't know, an inch or two thick. Like hundreds and hundreds of pages to the just shy of 1,000. And with the revised version, which is I think the one I got, may even be over 1,000 pages. But it's a how does this kind of show come together?
Yeah.
With him behind it.
Well, if you were doing a book like that for this season, I would think there would have to be a section on the fact that it feels like a conscious decision was made. We didn't have the Daleks. We didn't have the Cybermen. We didn't have the Weeping Angels.
Yes. I think there were a lot of choices of we need new threats, make it accessible, and you can't just retread the same ground. And there's both the same ground from the previous iteration of Doctor Who that Russell T. Davies had relaunched and the original run of Doctor Who. And I think he had gone in with a very strong kind of similarish feeling the first go-round with Eccleston and stuff of I've got to make it accessible for a new audience. It's been off the air for so long, etc. But it's got to have that history too.
Yeah.
And here, I've got to imagine there were certain things he had learned from doing the whole Eccleston and Tennant runs.
Well, and there are certain things he's probably had time to think about while not working the show.
Yes. And I know there are some people that once they're off a property, it's as if that thing doesn't exist for them. I cannot imagine Russell T. Davies was that way with Doctor Who. I think he is such a fan of the material that predated his run on it that he kept up with it afterwards. And there are aspects where at the beginning of the season, there were reference to the Timeless Child or whatever all that stuff was with the Whittaker Doctor and stuff that he acknowledged and kind of went with. So I think he may not have done what the other showrunners and writers had done in the intervening time, but he's also respectful enough to not invalidate what they did. And I think it's interesting to have a writer who had done the first revival of it and is now doing both a continuation and a second revival of it, because I think it kind of blurs the lines of those a bit. Because he's using some characters that were set up during, you know, UNIT and all that stuff. I'm trying to remember if Kate was from his run or afterwards. I think it was during his run. But Russell T. Davies was brought on for a couple of reasons. One, the show was floundering a little, I think, creatively and ratings-wise. And he also created Torchwood, he created the Sarah Jane Adventures, both of which were successful spinoffs.
Yeah.
Before universe building was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a realization of, well, crap, he did it too early. If we could do it now, that'd be awesome. Who can we get to do it? Well, wait a sec, this guy actually did.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I was cautiously optimistic with this season in terms of I couldn't imagine Russell T. Davies coming back without a good game plan. But can you go back to a property you've stepped away from and had such a respected run of and do equally good a second time around? And I think he did.
Yeah.
I would actually say this is absolutely, in my mind, a better season than the Eccleston season.
Yeah.
Nothing against Eccleston, but I like this Doctor way more.
I found it interesting that at the very end of the season, we had this long moment that seemed to be a, to use one of the famous quotes, take only memories, leave only footprints, be a responsible tourist. It's great to go and have fun, but be mindful section. It was a, the Doctor has grown through what he's experienced here. Now, whether we'll see some change to him because of that, I don't know, because he, from my perspective, has always been a pretty mindful and good tourist, trying to help people as he goes.
He has been, but we've seen some definite changes in the Doctor with the Jodie Whittaker version of it's not the companions, it's the fam.
Yes.
And almost an adrenaline junkie aspect to a, in a different way, to a different degree than we had seen. Certainly from, say, the Capaldi version. So the Doctor obviously changes a bit with each regeneration, or in this case, bigeneration, but also with each companion. And I thought Ruby was a good companion for this Doctor.
Yes.
They played well off each other. Both were strong presence on screen. I appreciated seeing Unit, but not spending too much time on it. And I loved how there was a bit more of a tourist aspect to this pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go see the Beatles. And he's like, nobody has ever asked for that. They want to see this, they want to see that. Yes, I'd love to go see the Beatles.
Yeah, you know,
kind of a thing.
Well, I enjoyed the Bridgerton episode.
Yes. Well, the Bridgerton one not only was fun for the period piece aspect of it, but then the cosplay aspect on top of that was hilarious, since they'd been kind of cosplaying all season.
Yeah, yeah.
And the setup of Rogue and then him kind of being lost to the Doctor. And they'd known each other for an evening, but a bond was definitely formed.
Yes, yes.
And he could have easily been the next companion, or could be a future one still.
Yeah.
But it also set the stage for how does this Doctor respond to either losing or leaving a companion behind.
Well, and Ruby had a great, I want to say a scene, but kind of a something happened off screen that for Ruby was a great, yes, that makes perfect sense. And going back to the episode that covered decades, we'd established she can think on her feet. Mm-hmm. She can problem solve. She dealt with it in an unexpected way thanks to earrings, but she handled it.
Well, and I think it was also a case of Russell T. Davies playing with our expectations.
Yes.
Because there's an aspect where it's known Millie Gibson, who plays Ruby Sunday, is not in the next season.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'll be in the holiday special, the Christmas special.
That's what I've heard.
But knowing she's not going to be in the next season, when there's at this point of do her and the Doctor part ways, and the Doctor's like, we've parted ways, and we're going down that path with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've seen. It makes sense. He doesn't have all the information, and, you know.
Yeah.
Just beautifully done. So I think it's a combination of having a really strong writer, showrunner, and Russell T. Davies. Some really talented people in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And obviously tons of talented people behind the camera and in the pre- and post-production areas.
I think in the finale, one of the Doctor's best scenes was actually when he was talking about Ruby's mother. And he was saying, yes, it's our feelings, it's our thoughts that make someone extraordinary.
She may seem ordinary, but the fact we imbued her with importance made her extraordinary.
Yeah.
Anyone can be important.
Yeah.
And that is so much an aspect of the kinds of messages Russell T. Davies seems to be trying to get out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love that about his writing, because he's making the world a better place by making a place that's a better world.
Yeah.
And I love that mentality.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so much fun. The other thing, and I don't know how much of that would have been in the script or if it was just, we need this set, go nuts. When we see the makeshift quasi-TARDIS in the finale.
That was impressive.
And it's the size of a large closet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that much bigger on the inside than the out. But it's almost like the TARDIS is turned inside out and all aspects of it are now in this tiny little 10x10 room.
It's built by memories and held together. Was it also held together by memories?
Something like that. But there was clearly the wardrobe section.
Yeah.
That Mel was in, and she was seeing the costume of her doctor. Mm-hmm. She was rifling through the Sonics drawer.
Yeah.
And there have been times we've heard about the wardrobe room when we got, I forget if it was the Matt Smith doctor the first time. There have been one or two where they would go into and, what's my new look going to be?
Yes.
What suits me other than this attire?
Yeah.
And I think that was an interesting choice with this doctor of, I don't think there is the clearly de facto or iconic look for this doctor. Because he would dress the part.
Yeah.
In the episodes, which was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
But you look at Capaldi had a particular outfit. Whitaker had a particular outfit. Matt Smith had a particular outfit. Tennant had a particular outfit. Same with Eccleston. And they're all, you know, the iconic look of that doctor. I'd be a little impressed to when Eagle Moss was doing figurines of all of them. Okay, you know what they need to look like. Now, I think Master Replicas is going to be continuing the Doctor Who stuff. Well, I know they are because they're coming out with miniature TARDISes, which apparently there have been a lot of makes and models, but the details are a little lost on me. But I'm hoping they continue with the small statues of the Doctors. But for this Doctor, the 15th, I'm not sure what I would expect that Doctor to be dressed in.
I don't know.
And I'm looking forward to hopefully finding out and getting a 14th Doctor that's suitably similar but different enough from the 10th. That
yeah.
I thought the Sonic this time around, while it was still called a screwdriver, looked totally different than anything we'd seen before.
It reminded me of a ergonomic mouse with a little thing that flipped in and out.
An ergonomic mouse with a almost a flip-out mini magnifying glass kind of a deal.
Yeah.
We see it a lot, but we never focus too much on it. But he can use it for blood samples, a remote control for Rogue's ship, which was kind of hilarious.
Yes.
That's the sort of thing. I liked that widget a lot more than the sunglasses Capaldi used.
Yes.
And those are the sorts of things of how are they not making toys out of this? Or if they are, how am I not finding out about this?
Yes.
So we saw the psychic paper a few times.
Yeah, but the psychic paper let him down on Rogue's ship.
Well, it also let Whitaker's down if it get the gender wrong. There are a few other times where it's picking up the wrong thought.
Yes.
But I thought that was a bunch of fun. I enjoyed the 8 episodes. None of them felt like filler, and none of them felt like they really needed that second part to flesh out the story or something.
Yeah.
And there was a period with the Tenet stuff where they were all two-parters. One to get the lay of the land, set the scene, hit the cliffhanger, and then the next to resolve.
Mm-hmm.
You get into the rhythm, that's cool, but I like getting it kind of all at once, too, in these episodes.
Yeah.
They're mini-movies, they're done in one with a connective aspect to it. But I also appreciated how, in the penultimate one, when we've got this one lady he's been seeing all over the place, I'm pretty sure they showed us a few versions we hadn't seen before.
They did. And apparently, I mean, she's listed as being in 7 episodes. So, I mean, I remember seeing her in Finetown. I remember seeing her as the ambulance.
Yeah. I hadn't recognized her as such, but yes.
Yes, exactly. Once they put them side by side.
But there was like a Borg version, another alien version. I think that's allowing for the, and they've had other adventures.
Yes, exactly. That's how I took that.
And I think that's a smart thing to do for a number of reasons, not the least of which is there are the comics that are coming out with this Doctor now. There's going to be the big audio dramas at some point.
Well, and the way she was in the Bridgerton episode was kind of subtle in terms of just the painting of the mother-in-law.
Yes. I found the Bridgerton one interesting in so much as they start the episode with them already in the time frame.
Yeah.
Typically, it's they peer out of the TARDIS. Yep, we're in the right spot. Let's go adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So, starting there and just doing it to have a good time. And I loved but I've never danced like this before. Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
You're getting a little help from the TARDIS.
Yes, yes.
Which, when we got at the end, the Doctor has used the quasi-TARDIS, it's just a fraction of its former self, to get to this last place they need to be. He's walking out, he's shutting the door, he kisses the door, thank you kind of a thing.
Yeah.
He treats his TARDIS well.
He does.
But I would expect no less from this Doctor, because he's a much more kind, caring, compassionate Doctor.
Well, and you were talking about the sets. When he went to the world where he needed a piece of metal, something real, to put into the machine that makes things from memories, the tent that he goes into at first, I'm like, I mean, it's just a bunch of stray fabric. But then the lighting and as they're moving around in there actually made a really great background.
For some reason, that reminded me of where Rose was in, I want to say, the 50th anniversary special with Tennant, Matt Smith, and the War Doctor.
Hmm. Well, I can see that.
I'm not saying the same thing at all, but it reminded me of that.
Yeah. I was impressed with how the lighting in the background worked in that scene.
Yeah. I would love for them, under this run of Russell T. Davies stuff, to do, and I would do it as a 2-hour special, not necessarily even as a Christmas special, but out of sync with a regular season or whatever, a cross-Doctor story.
Mm.
Because I think you could definitely get, obviously, the current Doctor. I think you could get David Tennant to play both the 10th and the 14th Doctors. I would imagine you could get Jodie Whittaker and Matt Smith. That's 5 Doctors right there.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if some of the older guys would be game for doing some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just be a ton of fun. So, I mean, hopefully you could get Capaldi and a few others. Eccleston doesn't seem to want to go back to the role.
Interesting.
Which...
Yeah.
Maybe he's afraid of getting typecast or something. I don't know. He's done plenty of other stuff, so I don't think that should be a concern. But it'd be fun to see the different doctors bouncing off each other in something worthy of needing that many doctors.
Yes.
Or maybe it's somebody has trapped them all and he's hoping that they'll kill each other or something, drive each other nuts. A lot of ways you could go. But I'm glad Russell T. Davies is back. I hope Shudigatwa sticks around for a good couple of seasons.
Me too.
Because he is just doing a wonderful job. He is so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I think he brings out the best aspects of the Doctor.
Yeah, he brings out the joy and the passion of the Doctor that brought me to the show in the first place.
Well, and even the realization that every once in a while he's got to do something that in his terms are monstrous.
Yes.
But there's no other way.
Yes.
And there literally is no other way.
Yeah.
And given what we've seen with past incarnations of the Doctor, where they will move heaven, earth, and time itself to get around not doing something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I see it.
Yeah.
So, ton of fun stuff. Hopefully this rejuvenates the Doctor Who franchise. Hopefully being on Disney Plus gets it out and accessible to more people.
Mm.
Hopefully they go look back at the previous series. Going back to the original series is a little harder because it's a little more dated to our current sensibility, visually, storytelling-wise, certainly effects-wise. And not all the episodes are available because the BBC didn't hang on to the film for a variety of reasons. But every once in a while you hear stories of somebody has found footage from when it was sent over to some other country to air there, or they dug it up in some archives and they've got now the third reel out of four for one episode or what have you. And in other cases, they have commissioned animation to kind of take the stills they've got and fill in the gaps using the audio that is more easily accessible because, in hell, I was one of the people who would do it back in the day. Some of us would sit in front of the TV set, press record on the tape deck, record what the TV had. It's not perfect, but before the VCR was around,
yep, it was something.
You at least had the audio.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping someday we get to the point where all the original stuff is available and that the current show is generating enough interest that more people become Doctor Who fans, and that hopefully being on Disney Plus maybe opens some doors for them to maybe even cross over with some other franchises.
That'd be interesting.
They've done a Doctor Who Star Trek crossover in the comics.
Hmm.
So I'd certainly be open to them looking into those avenues and seeing what possibilities there are.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.